Okay. We may be joined by some other people, and it's okay. We'll let them break in and announce themselves, and then we'll continue where we left off. It's a great group. We got people who've been here on previous cycles and some new people. HMTRI is a consortium of colleges. We work with EPA to help communities with their job development programs to establish sustainable programs. We sponsor an annual meeting every year of all the grantees, and we work with new communities who are trying to establish programs and existing communities to try to make their programs a little bit better. And the way we do that is with information exchange. And one of the things we do are these, we establish this professional learning community, and they're cycles of 10 calls. It's only about 30 minutes each call every other Wednesday. We're starting a brand new cycle. This is actually the 10th cycle we've had. And in the old days, we used to go out and have meetings around the country, but we found this is much more effective. People could just join in, and we try to have a discussion. Sometimes we have people talk about their program. Christine's been on talking about her program out there. We've had, in the last cycle, we had 9 different programs. Someone just joined?
My name is Francoise Elise. I'm from South Middlesex Opportunity Council in Framingham and Worcester and Springfield and Lowell, Massachusetts.
Good. You got some train traffic going on down there.
Yes, we do. And I am fond of hearing the noise. But
okay, if you are on the speakerphone, just take it off so we don't get background. I appreciate it. So anyway, as I was talking, we have these very informal, as you just found out, where we could have an open discussion. Sometimes we have facilitators, and sometimes it's more like talking head because we're trying to just impart information. This cycle, we're for the first couple sessions, because we've got the RFP coming up that's due on the 13th of February, we're going to be talking about developing a program and how that might relate to the EPA request for proposals. Later on, we're going to be talking about just things that can make your program better. And so one disclaimer we always talk about is we're not EPA. We work with EPA, and we've worked with them since the beginning of this program about 14 years ago. So we're very familiar with the RFP, how they're evaluated, and very close to the programs. So we're very familiar with what it takes to have a good program. And what it takes to have a good program is also what EPA is looking for in their proposals. And as this program has evolved, we've kind of worked off each other. They have essentially developed the RFP. It's unlike other grants. Other grants, you write a proposal, they give you the money, and you develop the program. EPA has done this so long, they know exactly what they're looking for, and they're really looking for the program plan to describe how you're actually going to implement it. And if you write a comprehensive program, it's just a matter of following that program plan and tweaking it as you go along. So EPA has, in this case, it's a cooperative agreement, and they've actually established everything they want you to do in that RFP. So it's a lot different than your typical grant writer that would be a little more creative. This is more very much to the point. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that in the next two sessions. We always start off these professional learning community calls with just the basic news from Washington. And, of course, we know what the news is that affects us, and that's the February 13th due date for the RFP. Most of you know that RFP is divided into two sections. One that qualifies you to go on, and that's a qualifying criteria, and you have to be a nonprofit, and it's basic $200,000. Most of you have probably read all that. Those who don't qualify will be notified in early March, and then they go to the ranking criteria, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit today. The ranking criteria are those set of requirements that they want to see what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And the announcements of the 12 or so people who will be funded this year will be announced in May. And then by the time you get the money, it'll be August. They do allow you to incur costs between the announcement time and the time you get your money. So once May starts, you could really get into the program in earnest, and your project period will really begin in August of in the fall. But today, what we want to talk about what's happening there in EPA. A few announcements. There is a Green Jobs Conference in early February. Those of you who are going to be developing proposals will probably be busy. That's the 10th and 11th of February. It's a great conference. It's in Washington, D.C. And I'm going to put all this information in our post-session notes, so you don't really have to worry too much about getting URLs or any information. In the next 2 days, everyone's who's on the PLC list will get post-session notes with all of these links. If you're recommending someone to join the PLC or you're not on it, just send the contact information to msenew@aol.com, msenew@aol.com, and we'll make sure you're on the list. And we've got about 250 people that get this newsletter. We can expect, if we look at the EPA's request for proposals, which they had the webinars this last week, two of them, there were about 30 people on those webinars, so we could figure there might be about 30 to 60 proposals. Many of them will not qualify, so then it might bring it down to maybe 40 contenders, and then so that's 12 will be chosen out of 40, so that's about 1 in 4 chance. Those numbers could change, but it's about 1 in 4 chance. They always emphasize that if you don't get it this year, use that as a starting point, because if you go to your regional office, they can show you where you're deficient, and these are annual renewals of this, so there will be another competition next year about this time, and you can use your proposal and enhance your program plan so that things will it'll look better next year. But let's focus on trying to make your program stand out as much as possible this year. And the question is, how do you do that? And I don't, well, in our PLCs, we don't go necessarily over all these ranking criteria, but we're really interested in discussing how can you make your proposal really stand out. And, of course, the things that EPA emphasizes is that working with the community, working with your partners, and working with your community. And these are just so important that to the success of the programs, and so important that Kathleen Curry had indicated in her discussion that, you know, if you don't have your partners lined up now, you forget it. But I would say that what you need to be doing now is refining your partners and starting to have meetings. And when we look at the grants that are awarded, the primary grantee often is a nonprofit, like Zender, or LA Conservation Corps, Cypress Mandela, Oregon Tradeswomen, Metropolitan Energy Agency. These are nonprofit organizations who are the prime. There are some, like Tacoma. There are actually city organizations, Nye County. These are the primary. Submitter of the proposal was actually a city entity. There are some like Florida State that are colleges or community colleges, and there's also some that are WIBs, workforce investment boards like Merrimack Valley. So we kind of got like four categories of people of organizational structures that actually submit it. But the important thing is whether you're a nonprofit, a city, a college, or a WIB, you really have to partner with all those others. And if you have a grant in place now, you want to strengthen those partnerships. If you're just starting your grant or you're in the process of developing your grant, you want to make sure that you've got all of those partners. So, for example, if you are a city government, you're going to have to make sure you get a training organization as a partner. You're going to have to make sure everyone needs the Workforce Investment Board as a partner, almost to the point where they're probably looking, okay, how are you working with the Workforce Investment Board? They represent the employer. You also need the community organization or the nonprofit on your board. So what we're basically saying is, at this stage in the game, if you're an existing grantee or you're someone who's thinking of developing this program, start your partnerships and get them lined up. And I'm not saying that you're going to be splitting the $200,000 with all these people. I'm saying they need to be your partners in developing a job development program in your community. And you'll find that in most cases they won't be financial partners. They'll be more in-kind partners. The WIB will be giving you support services. The college may be giving you training services. The city is giving you access to all sorts of city services. The nonprofits, maybe a community nonprofit, is giving you access to the community. So you need all of those. Another partner that you need to also include are someone in the employer community. You need someone that represents the people who may be hiring your graduates or some strong employers in the area. It might be an organized labor organization, as in the case of, say, Cypress Mandela, that has a very strong relationship with organized labor, or it may be a particular employer in a community that is saying, I'm interested in your graduates, and I want to interview them, and I want to talk to them. You want to get them on your advisory board on your as a partner. So this is the time when we want to make sure we're doing those things, because when you get into the end of January and you're hard and heavy into writing these proposals, you're not going to have time to call a meeting and have a meeting of these partners. So I would say it's not too late. It's getting late. It's not too late to develop these partnerships. If you don't have them, what I would say is everyone who is thinking of doing a proposal needs to schedule a meeting sometime next week with all of these people, someone from each of these organizations. And you need to find out, ask them, one, we're planning on submitting a proposal and developing a job training program. And you might say, if we'd like to submit a proposal this year, but it's an annual resubmission, so we want to make this a working committee, could you send a representative over? And you want to do that for the WIB. You want to do it perhaps with a community college or a training organization. You want to find someone in city government. Now, the closer you can get to the mayor's office, Office of Economic Development, or certainly someone in the deaner, the environmental department or health department, or someone certainly in city planning, maybe someone in economic development, you want to make sure they're at the meeting. And because you're going to want to tie into any local brownfields work that's going on. So you might see if you could get someone from the environmental department familiar with brownfields that's working in the community. You might want to get someone from the mayor's office of economic development. And you'll be amazed, as soon as you mention jobs, you're going to get some really positive response of people saying, okay, when can we meet and hold this meeting? You definitely need the nonprofit or the community organization involved. So once you've decided what communities you're going to work in, you need to get some community groups, whether it's religious, any kind of non-governmental organization that you might be working with. And this is going to be the people you're going to be working with to recruit your participants. And so as I said, it's it's not too early to, if you've got a grant, to tweak your partners, hold meetings. If you don't have partners yet, find out which of these categories did I mention that you don't have someone representing, and get them in there. And just hold a meeting. If you've got a grantee program already going, you may want to just hold a meeting anyway and say, this is where we're at. We're kind of refreshing our program. We're looking forward to the spring when we're going to be doing, if you've got a grant, we're going to be doing a cycle coming up when we want to look at our renew and look at our partners and get them participating. This is all in anticipation of documenting this for your RFP response. And this is going to make your program stand out among all the others because you have representation from all these different groups. And you're going to be, once you have those meetings, one meeting or two meeting, you're going to also, you've got to make sure they know what you're doing so that you can get their phone numbers and contact information. You'll be able to use that in writing the grant. You're going to have to keep them informed, so if they're called by EPA, they'll be, oh, yeah, I went to a meeting 2 weeks ago with them, and this is, I'm familiar with the program. And at the meeting, when you set your agenda, you know, you certainly want to announce it, but you want to have them participate in it. What kind of program should we develop? And the neat thing about getting people from all of these categories is you're also going to find out, is there anything else going on that's similar to what we're doing? Who's doing this? What else? Do you know of anyone else in the program? You might find, for example, that City Hall, City says, well, we have a wastewater treatment grant, and we're training wastewater treatment plant operators, but not in your neighborhood. And it's specific, got a certain specificity to training people on the job. So you know that you could include this in your grant, that there is a city program, but you're not duplicating it because you're going to be doing wastewater treatment plant training in a specific neighborhood. So it gives you tremendous insight in what's happening in your community. When the people from economic development are there, they're going to be able to give you statistics to say, well, we could supply you with some demographic materials, community materials to include in your grant. So at this working meeting, you're going to be drawing out of these people, not only are you partners, we need you as partners, but you're going to be gathering information for writing the grant and hardcore information. From the college people, you're going to be able to start talking about curriculum and training. From the WIB people, they're going to be saying, okay, this is what we could give you in terms of life skills. These are the courses we could provide. These are the services we could provide. We could, as Christine does, you can send all your participants through our screens to find out if they qualify for assistance, additional assistance. All of these things you're going to want to include in the grant. And you're going to be able to accomplish this all in this one meeting that you're going to have. As far as the nonprofits go, the community groups, they're going to be able to give you information on the community, kind of information you're not going to be able to get from City Hall. You're going to be able to get information on the problems of the community that you'll be able to put. And this is what EPA is looking for. Are you doing feet-on-the-ground type of research in developing your proposal? It's not, well, you've got a grant writer and he's just going to chug something out. Are you actually into the community? And it's not that you have to go out and walk the streets of the community, but if you get the community groups in your meeting that we're talking about holding next week, you hold this meeting, you're going to be able to draw all this information in. So the meeting of partners that we're talking about is almost like a preparatory meeting before you start writing your grant or as you're writing the grant. And a great way to collect data is to do that. You're going to want to, of course, document the meeting. And if you could hold, the more meetings you could hold, the better. When you talk to the City Hall people, just also find out if you can make an announcement at the next city council meeting. We suggest this to everyone. It's a great idea. Again, if you put this in your proposal, one of the things about this grant is they have ranking criteria, and they score points on every point. And if you've got in there, well, we on February 1st, we announced our program at the city council meeting, and we got good response and full support of city council. It's a tremendous boost in terms of points that makes your program stand out from everyone else who may not have had an announcement to City Hall. Another public forum you may want to consider, and we're talking about this today because you still have time to do these things, find out from the brownfields, from the environmental people, when you talk to them, are you going to have any public hearings on any brownfields that are going on? We're in the process, while EPA is also awarding job training grants, they're also awarding assessment cleanup grants. So the difference is they have to hold public hearings and public meetings. So if you could find out from the brownfields people in the Department of Environment, are there going to be any public meetings regarding brownfields? We'd like to be there to announce that we're intending on submitting a grant proposal to EPA to do job development. And they would welcome you to do that. I've been to public meetings where that's exactly what happens. There was a public meeting that had to do with brownfields in Gary, Indiana. And, of course, they wanted to announce that they would be doing a job training program. And are there any questions? And this is what the program would look like. Now, when you put this in your proposal, the question is, how many other of those grantee applicants have done that? And it, again, makes you just stand out head and shoulders among everyone else. So I do have to apologize a little because it's kind of a talking head session today, but these are things that we have found over the years that make grantees and grant applications really stand out amongst all the others. Now, one of the things that was said in these webinars that appears to be the case, they need a subjective way of evaluating your proposal. And the way they do that, of course, they go through the qualifying criteria and find out who goes on to the next level. But once they do that, they take all these proposals and they start taking them apart. And you saw all the ranking criteria and they are all the points that are assigned for each thing. And they break into groups and they start grading these things. Now, they're going to go point by point. And one of the things that Kathleen and Joe indicated was the ones that are recommended for funding have very high scores. We're talking about, you know, they're talking about 93, 95 points out of 100, very high points, which means you really can't afford to skip over or miss any of these things. And the best surefire way of approaching this grant as you start talking about writing it is take some time and go through that RFP and outline, whether it's on a whiteboard or on a computer or on paper, outline every question that's asked, every one. Don't miss one. If it says something, describe this, write down describe this. If it says how are you interacting with the local nonprofit, you write that question down. Every one. And do not miss one, just every one. And if you want to put one on each sheet of paper, do that. Then take all those pieces of paper and start to develop your response to that question. Now, treat every one of those as an individual piece of paper. For example, you could take if you put a question on each piece of paper, each half a piece of paper, every one, and you're going to end up with quite a few. And it might seem like an exhaustive list, but once you get this going, it's going to make your writing a lot easier. You may want to split these things up and have people respond to each of these questions, but you have to answer each one of those pieces of paper. If someone were to give that piece of paper to me and I could read your response and say, yeah, I understand that. That is a winning proposal. In other words, Every answer is standing on its own. It's responding to every question. And you want to do that through the whole grant. And when you do that, is by the time you get to the first week in February, you can take all those pieces of paper now. Now you can go to a grant writer, and you can take all those pieces of paper, and now you can, you don't want to repeat the questions, as we actually, many years ago, that's what some of the best grantees did. They repeated each question. Kathleen says, don't repeat the question, but put the answer in there. So now you could take all your questions, divide them up into the each of the ranking criteria that they propose, and then just put that all together in one big document. And then, of course, that's the hard part, and then the easier parts are the budgets, and, of course, you've got to get all the documentation that you need, which isn't, it takes a while to do. But what we're trying to do today is kind of just do a very quick introduction on where we're at for those of you who are thinking of submitting programs, and then, of course, those of you who are mentors and have programs going, maybe you could give us some tips. Christine, what's your feeling on all this? You've been through this a number of times, and very successful. Christine Campbell has got a great program out there. What advice would you give to some of the new grantees trying to write these proposals?
Well, I think just reinforcing a couple of the things you said, which is go through that RFP meticulously, and you'll find in different portions of it that sometimes it seems like they're asking the same for the same information they asked for in an earlier section. And you might be tempted to say, well, I already answered that and skip over it, but you don't want to do that because sometimes when they review these proposals, they parcel out sections to different people to read and score. So if the section that you don't put that information in gets given to someone else to read, that it will seem to them that you didn't respond to that portion. So you just want to be meticulous about that. We usually have three or four people go through the RFP and kind of outline what they're asking for and make sure that we cover it. We have a lot of different eyes on it, just not one person trying to cover all those bases. And again, the stressing connecting with your workforce investment board or your workforce council in your area. I know some of them are a lot more responsive than others, and some have their own agendas and may not necessarily want to devote resources to supporting what you're doing, but try to engender as much support as you can and make mention of that in the grant, because and anything else that you connect with in your community that is leveraging other resources to provide services to your participants. And so we work real hard on that too, trying to get as many different resources in the community as we can, all the way up to having like our laborers union here in the Puget Sound area gives credit toward, in their apprenticeship program, they give points toward the people that have completed certain segments of our program toward their actual journeyman apprenticeship status. So try to craft those partnerships.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, out in Hunter's Point, I remember when you all first started writing your grant, and Hunter's Point is a fascinating, it's a great place. I mean, it's unfortunate. It's a community that was used up by the military. It's been victimized many times by not only the military, but the industry that built up around it, and then they kind of redlined the area, and they abandoned it, and now it's one of some of the most valuable real estate in San Francisco, and now they're trying to push people out. And but it's an opportunity to develop a local program and get people that live there a chance to get some of the jobs that are being generated. Now, Jason, I know what you all did when you were developing this program, and we were talking a couple of years ago about this, is you went to the closest grantees who and said, you know, we'd like to start this program, and can you help us? Are you familiar with that, Jason? Or?
I'm actually not. I'm familiar with Hunter's Point Family as an organization. I'm relatively new to this grant opportunity, but was not around during that time, so I'm not familiar with that.
Well, what happened was y'all went to the local, you went to Cross Bay, and you you told them we need help, and what would you do to do if to help us? And for those of you who are out there who are just developing this and kind of new, don't hesitate to find other local programs. Now, they can't be in your community, or if they are, you have to demonstrate that you're in a different different community than another. For example, if you're in Boston, you might be in North Boston or South Boston, or New York or some other community. But don't hesitate to go to one of these established programs. And if you need some contact information, you can write me, and we can get you some kind of, and call them up. One of the things we emphasize at our annual meeting, and Christine knows this, and is that all of our grantees are out there to help other grantees, and they can help you with some pointers in developing your program. And this is one of the things that people at Hunters Point say really helped them get the program going. Jason, how's the program going out there?
It's going well. I think the challenges, like probably anywhere, you know, is on the placement side. And we have, as you indicated, a number of, there's no shortage of contractors and others that are working on, whether it's the shipyard, whether it's working with the wastewater treatment plant in our community. But as always, I think placement and just the impact of the recession, which, you know, took the slack out of the labor force, meaning that it's just become that much harder and more competitive, even for folks that have certifications to access a smaller number of jobs. So I think we're making a big push in this round to add new employer partners, and I think we use the political pressure of local hire here in San Francisco to encourage our potential employer partners to hire the individuals that are coming out of the trainings to meet their local hire requirements. And so we're trying to both obviously develop the pipeline, but also make sure that these employers understand their requirements around local hire laws here. We're trying to expand our pool of potential places to put folks when they come through the training.
And the neat thing about Hunters Point, you were a community group that had been around for many years, and you went, the community group who had the link to the city and with the trainers and with the WIB to go in the other direction. So you were an example of a community-based organization who reached out to these other groups. In the case of Tacoma, where the city actually is the grantee, and they actually are giving everything to Tacoma to implement that grant, but it's working extremely well. One program isn't better than the other as long as everyone's on the team, and it just depends on who's got the resources and actually boils down to who's got the personnel who are best fitted to head this program up. So, great. We're going to be meeting again on the 29th. We do these every 2 weeks. And between now and the 29th, tomorrow we'll be sending out some post-session notes. And there'll be some other things we didn't talk about. Last week we had some questions people were asking about how do you track your students? And, of course, great ideas, like make sure you get their Facebook pages, because people will lose their cell phone numbers and they'll move, but they usually keep their Facebook account. Now, when they apply for grants, when they apply for the program as applicants, get to know their family. Their families are going to be there, even though they may not. Get to know their employer once you place them. So in terms of these tracking, these are the kind of things we'd like to talk about in the PLC. How do you make sure you're tracking when you've got a student population who, after they've graduated, may be just working for a little while or may be moving, they may be switching phone numbers, they may be in and out of jobs. And these are techniques that the grantees have found work, like the Facebook page, like connecting. We've got one grantee in Louisiana that gives everyone a little tablet and has their email and continues that account after they graduate. So, does anyone have any questions out there that they'd like us to talk about or in today? We're going to be talking more about this next week because 29th will be, again, just before that everyone will be in the midst of these grants. We'll be talking about some more of these tips that you may want to look at. But any questions on what we talked about today or anything that you want to add? Anyone want to add anything that we may not have talked about? Okay. Well, look forward to hearing everyone next on the 29th of January. And between now and then, if you have any questions, just write and we'll talk about it. Okay. Well, thanks again, everyone. And
thank
talk
you.
To you soon. Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Okay.